Tammy from Lakeside.
Hi, my name's Tammy. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for having me here this evening. My sobriety date is June 11th, 1990. So actually today is my 21st birthday. Congratulations to the other recipients up here who took cakes. It was nice to see. 21 years ago, I went into Mesa Vista Hospital. And I'll loosen up here in a little while. I've never been to this meeting before, and I've never seen so many people before. So at any rate, 21 years ago today, I went into Mesa Vista Hospital. And I checked myself into Mesa Vista because I couldn't stop drinking. I could not stop drinking. And I had tried everything pretty much to stop drinking, and it was getting worse. Exactly what you people taught me was happening, and that it was getting worse. And I always share that I didn't get in on a high note or I would have never come. Because the truth is, for many years, I loved to drink, I loved to carouse, I loved to smoke cigarettes, I loved to go out to Mexican food, I loved to drink more. I mean, I drank if I was happy, sad, bored, lonely. I just drank, you know. So, I'm truly grateful to the 12 Steps, to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to my God. And I call my higher power God. And I thought about this. I didn't put a whole heck of a lot of thought. I'm just really going to let God speak through me, and I'm just going to tell the truth. I only have one story, and it's my story. And Tyler, I loved listening to you. I really did. That you have an awesome story. And I really, the enthusiasm and the youth in you was awesome. And I, too, have a story, and I think that I know all of us get here because we have a story. And so when people are saying, are you nervous? Are you nervous? I said, truly, I just have one story, and it's my own story. And so if I can just recall, minus the many blackouts, then, you know, we'll be okay. We really will. Oh, God. It was not a high note I got in on. But anyway, I want to thank my family and my friends for coming today. My sponsors here, women who I sponsor are here, my husband's here, best friends, and many, many women from all the meetings that I go to. I go to a lot of meetings, and I go to women's meetings. And the reason I do that is because I have an 11-year or a 10-year-old, and I have an 8-year-old, and I have a busy, busy life. I work full-time, and so I go to two meetings a week, because that's the way it is, and they're women's meetings where we can get down and dirty and share the real deal about things that go on in my life. And so I have a lot of women's support here today, and I thank you, all the meetings. You know, I'm going to start at the beginning, and it's just my mom and dad got married at a very young age. I'll refer to my mom as Jerry. And then my dad is Ron. And they lived in El Centro, and they got married. They were high school sweethearts. And I was born in Grand Forks, North Dakota, because they were both in the Air Force. And they had a military base in Grand Forks, North Dakota. They didn't stay there long, and they came back to California. Within a really short time, my mom and dad got divorced. High school sweethearts, and they got divorced. And my mom married Dr. Hebert, who was a pediatrician. Come to find out years later, and the reason I'll kind of roll through this is that my mom apparently, and I do believe, you know, bless her soul, but she was having an affair with Dr. Hebert in El Centro. So when Dr. Hebert left El Centro and went to Santa Rosa, I went as well, and so did my mom. And I never really put that piece of that puzzle together. But nonetheless, that's what happened. And so my mom and dad divorced, and we moved to Santa Rosa. And we had a beautiful house, big house, you know, a doctor and all that stuff, a horse. And it was good. There was a lot of entertaining that went on in our life, in my parents' life. And my mom's father was a drunk, a violent drunk, that a lot of stuff went on in their home that, thank God, didn't go on in my home. But my mom was a twin, and she had two brothers, and her dad played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he was just a real violent man when he drank. And even my dad said that, Ron. He said, when your grandpa would drink, he was mean. Anyway, he raised the kids, and pretty much on my whole side of my mom's side of my family is alcoholism. My Aunt Jackie's an alcoholic in recovery. My mom passed away 5 years ago, but she was a raging alcoholic through growing up, and both of her brothers passed away with alcohol-related issues. So it really was strong on my mother's side of the family. That being said, we were in Santa Rosa. And I remember entertaining and all that my parents did. And I also remember I always had a low-level anxiety. I really had anxiety, and I would never want my mom to leave because I would beg her, please don't leave, because I was afraid I was going to swallow my Adam's apple. Like, I was just so fearful. It's such a young age, you know, and it was seemed very real to me. So as I look back, that obsessive thinking, that anxiety, that restlessness, that lonely little girl started, you know, probably third, fourth, fifth grade. What ended up ultimately happening is that Dr. Hebert, and he's since passed away, and he was a great stepdad. But so when I talk about people, I'm just going to tell the truth about him. He ended up messing around with you know, infidelity. So it's kind of interesting. I thought years later, like, really what kind of got to my mom and what split them up is exactly what my mom walked through with Dr. Hebert. And when I was in the fourth grade, my mom, they were splitting up. He had been unfaithful to her, I think probably numerous times. And she would cry. God, she would cry and cry and cry. And her drinking started. Her drinking started, and she started to drink. And it was very noticeable, and I would hear her cry at nighttime. And I had a little sister, Trinina. Trinina's 4 years younger than I am. And it was just hard. It was really hard. It was heartbreaking because my mom, here I was in the fourth grade, I really needed her to be a mom. And my mom was dealing with her own sadness. Fast forward a couple years later, eventually she and Dr. Hebert split up, and my mom found another gentleman whose name was Bob. And Bob was a nice man. All the way, he actually put me my first few years through college. And Bob and my mom never got married, but they were together. And he was a great man. Thank God I always had nice stepdads. But see, I had a lot of them. You know, it's like my mom, bless her soul, she never really could stand on her own 2 feet. And I share that with you because down the road it'll all come together as to how I got where I am today. But my mom left Dr. Hebert, but she always was in love with him, always in love with him. And I would always cry, and we would listen to sad music, and, you know, it was just, ooh. And then poor Bob, man, Bob, he was a great codependent because Bob just kind of hung around, you know, and he was a nice man, but, you know, but my mom was a dazzler. She was a dazzler, you know, she was a party girl. She was like the life of the party, and I hated that. And she would, and so finally at some point she and Bob were splitting up. And I remember in the seventh grade, we lived in Morgan Hill. I come from the Bay Area, and I remember we had a beautiful home and still the horses and all that with Bob. And I remember being up where our pool was and looking up into the sky and saying, God, I just don't want to be here. Like, I was so sad in my heart because I couldn't get out. I couldn't get away because I was only in the seventh grade. And I was so sad. Like, I just had so much sadness. And my mom was drinking. Her alcoholism continued. And I had a horse. Thank God I loved horses. And I got a horse, and I worked with my horse a lot. I spent a lot of time with my horse, and I named my horse Tequila. I did. And I couldn't even ride her because she was so young, so I would work with her. Like, I would halter break her, and then I'd put the saddle on her. I mean, we worked with Tequila. But, you know, like, why would I name my horse that? Like, little did I know what I was in for. You know what I mean? Those were all subtle signs. We finally, my mom and Bob split up, and we moved to Walnut Creek. Walnut Creek, California, which is up in the Bay Area next to Concord, Lafayette, Moraga. And my Aunt Jackie, my mom had a twin, Aunt Jackie, and my Aunt Jackie had a husband, my Uncle Tom, and he was an attorney from Yale. And so my Aunt Jackie said, come on up to Walnut Creek to my mom, and you guys can live in Walnut Creek. So I had come from the 7th and 8th grade in Morgan Hill, next to Gilroy. And I wore my shirt up, tied up to here, because I had horses. I never wore makeup. And next thing you know, I went to Walnut Creek, which was like very upper middle class. And we had a rental house on this road. And our house was very old, and it had no grass, and we rented it. And we truly, honestly, we didn't fit in. We really, truly didn't fit in. And I went to Northgate High School, and my cousin Joy, we're 2 weeks apart, my Aunt Jackie's daughter, she went to that school too. And so I kind of got socialized in Walnut Creek because I always would look, I would walk home, I'd ride my bike, and I would wish I was other people. I would look at their finely manicured lawn, and I would think, they have no clue what's going on in my home. They have no idea. I want my mom to bake cookies. I want her to be present. Jerry's alcoholism really, really continued. And she was very unpredictable. She would say she would be places, and she wouldn't. She would say, I'll show up. She would show up, but she would show up drunk or with pills. And she would say, nothing's wrong, but I could always tell in her voice that she was loaded. I remember and so the bottom line is I didn't feel I belonged in Walnut Creek either. You know, my Aunt Jackie, she's married to my Uncle Tom, great people, but they had like all these Mercedes and they would go to Tahoe and go skiing. And we had like this brown station wagon, you know, it was just ugly and it had like this Mexico sticker on it. And I'm like, fuck. You know, I remember like I wanted a station wagon, even with Dr. Hebert, and they got like a Volkswagen station wagon. You know, I wanted the big kind, like with the seat in the back that you could look out. Like everything, I wanted cowboy boots. They got me square tip instead of pointed. It was like I just always was like a one mark short of where, you know what I mean? I always wanted to be there and I always was here. And I always felt less than. I always felt less than that my mom was dirty. That my mom, nobody knew what was going on. And people loved my mom. You know, she would say, I'm going to paint that brown station wagon. We're going to call it Cherry Jerry Rhubar. And I'd be like, oh, God. You know, she's just a handful. She was a handful, you know. She was a full-time job. But what I did in high school is I spent a lot of time worrying about her, worrying if she was going to come home, worrying if I was going to write a bounce check when I would pick up her dry cleaning, because she dry cleaned everything. She fucking dry cleaned everything, even our underwear, man. Send it off to the dry cleaner, you know. So, you know, the bottom line is in the 7th grade, I went to a school dance, and I went to Northgate High School. And I went to a school dance, and we decided, my best friend and I, we were going to get some alcohol, and we were going to get vodka, and that's what we were going to get. But we ended up with tequila. And so, and we did. And so what we'd do is we'd drink it, and we'd chase it with a Coke, and we'd say, not bad, not bad at all. And after every sip, not bad, not bad at all. Mary, who's district attorney still in Walnut Creek, California, Mary made it through the night. I ended up passed out in the school bathroom, passed out. First time I ever drank, I was passed out. Then she had to get me out to the lawn so that I wouldn't get in trouble. And then my mom came to pick me up, and I made sure I sat right next to the window, you know, next to the door, because I'd been throwing up, you know, and that was the first time I drank. I drank another time in high school where we had a party, and the same thing happened. Threw up in my bed, got very, very drunk. So the two times I did drink in high school, and it probably was only two or three times, it wasn't good. I was already out of control, and I really hadn't even got out of the starting gate yet. And I was already, like, you know, behind. But the point in that is that just the sadness growing up with an alcoholic mom, the loneliness, the inconsistencies, the abandonment, and the true hate for her. Like people would say, oh, you remind me just like Jerry. And I swear to God, the hair on my back, I'd be like, the last person I want to be like is that woman. Because I didn't like her, you know. So anyway, I ended up going to a junior college for 2 years in the Bay Area, and then I went away to UCLA. And I went to UCLA, and I always was between the two worlds. And what I mean by that is I would go to school at UCLA, and then I would come home like every other weekend, and I would drink, and I would party. And I know this is an AA meeting, but drugs is also a part of my story. And in the Bay Area, there was a lot of good cocaine. And I loved to, like, drink and snort and tell my life story, and then they would pass out. I'd just go on to someone else. You know, it was like, it's no big deal. And then I'd play cards, and I would, you know, I'd balance my checkbook, and then I'd go play some more cards, and, you know. And when I was going through college, I ended up leaving UCLA. I finally called up my parents because I got put on academic probation. UCLA was nothing like the junior college. You know, my 4.0 quickly, I was on academic probation. I'm like, I didn't understand. People are like, good luck, finals week, good luck, good luck. And I was like, yeah, no problem, no problem, until I got my report card. And I was like, oh, my God, these people are intense. I went back to the Bay Area. I went back to the Bay Area, and I went to Cal State Hayward because they were on the quarter system. But anyway, I moved back to Walnut Creek, and so I worked at Carlos Murphy's. I always worked in the waitressing business because the waitressing business had good drinks, Long Island iced teas, top shelf, and everybody loved to play cards and do drugs and stay out till, you know, 2, 3 in the morning and then, you know, go home and then do it all over again. I did end up graduating from Cal State Hayward, but at the end, to be honest, there was times I went to my finals and I was smelling of alcohol because I had been drinking. I almost didn't make it to my graduation from college because I had been up all night partying. And that was happening more and more. And I lived with my sister, my little sister, Trinina. And Trinina knew, because we had grown up with Jerry, Trinina knew that I was becoming more and more exactly what we had grown up with. And it broke my little sister's heart because she was like kind of always on the straight and narrow. She's still not alcoholic. And I was becoming exactly who my worst nightmare was. My behavior was like that. My mom ended up leaving Bob, and she got with another guy. And then she got with another guy after that who was like a couple years older than me, and she was in the carnival. She was a carny. So she was... she was a handful. She was a handful. And so when she finally died, she hadn't drank in 5 years when my mom died, and my husband said, you know, you never cry much about your mom. And I said, you know what, it's because I cried so many tears for so many years that when my mom finally passed away, she had not been there for so long that my heart had been broken so many times that I didn't have a lot of tears to cry because there wasn't a significant loss for me. There really wasn't. But she did die sober. But it was so cute. Even when she was getting close to dying at the end, she said, you know what, Tammy? She was down here. We were talking one day in Hillcrest, and she said, I didn't have a problem with alcohol, Tammy. And I said to her, I just looked at her, and I said to myself, I said, you know what, is it really important? I thought, you know what, it's not important. I don't need to be right. You know what? She has a story that she knows, and I have the story that I know and I lived. And for once, I didn't need to be right. I just needed to, because she hadn't drank in 5 years. I was saying, isn't that amazing? God did for you what you couldn't do for yourself. And she said, it was never that bad. And I said, okay. So, you know, but that, you know, it finally was okay. I didn't need to grind my point home, like, well, talk to Trinina and I. You know, it was terrible. You know, it's just like it is what it was. And the bottom line is that I'm 51 years old, and I'm responsible for my life today. I'm responsible for the choices I make, and I'm not a victim. I'm a victim as long as I allow myself to be. But the truth is I have a choice today as to who I want to be. And I can wallow in that, and I can relive that. And to a point, it's good to honor that little girl that I can parent her today, but I don't let her get away with a whole heck of a lot. Because I'd love for people to pity me. Like, if you only had the childhood I did, you know, that's like, you know, that how bad it was. And what it would do is hold me back from growing today. Hold me back from being a responsible woman today. That's what it would do. And I'm always looking for the easier, softer way. It's somebody else's expense. So it's like I need to stand up today, 21 years sober on this day, 51 years old, and say I'm responsible for me, and it wasn't a perfect childhood. However, it could have been a lot worse. It could have been a lot better. So I'm, you know, that's kind of the philosophy that I have worked with. Anyway, I graduated from college, and I worked in the restaurant business, and I had a ball. I loved it, loved it, loved it, because I could party and do what I wanted to do, but it was progressing. I was starting to sleep around more, starting to act crazy, not good. Finally moved down here to San Diego. I had a friend, and there was a Carlos Murphy's in La Jolla, and there was a Carlos Murphy's in Tahoe. Now, I thought to myself, self, your time to move around. And I thought, well, if I go to Tahoe, I could ski, and then I could work. And then, but thank God I didn't do that, because I would have partied. You know, it's like, who, I would have moved over to, you know, North Shore, and God knows what would have happened. But I moved down to San Diego. I had a girlfriend, and I said, can I come stay on your couch? Like, how bold is that? And I did. I transferred down with Carlos Murphy's in La Jolla, and I worked for 2 years. I lived on her couch for a couple months till I met up with some people. And I got a place, a whole, we got a house in Mira Mesa. And I got to party like I liked, and I got to drink, and I got to play around, and I got to do everything I wanted to do. But I was feeling worse and worse about myself. And I was doing more and more behaviors that were not like myself. And the truth is that I felt very sad, very lonely, and I compromised myself a lot. Because, in fact, I didn't think I was worth any more than that. My dad at some point, Ron, said to me, Tammy, when are you going to use that college degree? I was 27, and I was still, you know, drinking and So I'm just going to be 100% honest today as to where I am. I applied with Cox Cable, had no clue what the hell I was going to do with Cox Cable, and I applied with the San Diego County Probation Department. 6 months later, I'm working for the Probation Department. 24 years later, I'm still working for the Probation Department. And I love my job. I love it. And I share that with you because it's a huge part of my story. And the part of my story is that I got hired on with the Probation Department. I loved the work. And I remember when I was going to the academy, I had a Rally Sport Camaro. And what I did is I was driving home, and I had been to Carlos Murphy's. I had been partying, and I was driving home. And on the way home, I ran into some weeds and stuff. I was going to the probation academy, and I ran into some weeds. I had a blowout. I ran into a car. A lot of things happened, and I parked the car, and I went inside. I'm going to the probation academy. And next thing you know, SDPD shows up in the morning. And what they had done is I had had a blowout somewhere along the way, and I had hit a parked car, which ran into a parked car. And then they followed to my house, because with the blowout, it made that really deep line in the concrete all the way. All they had to do, there was my Rally Sport Camaro perched pretty right in front of my house, you know. And so, you know, when I had a drunk in public, I mean, you know, I would pull over, sleep for a few hours, get back on the road, you know. And the bottom line is it was getting worse. And so I also, when I was with the probation department, I got a wet reckless. And that one thing that happened, I got it reduced to an unsafe lane change. Because the truth is, it was. I mean, it was not a safe lane change when that happened. Always skirting the system. But the bottom line is, one time I set out, and then what I did is my brake light, my battery light went on, and I was on the freeway. I turned off my lights, then I turned them back on. I wanted to know how much juice it was using, the car itself. And I got pulled over. I was like, oh, shit. Next thing you know, I'm at the highway patrol station because I was drunk. And this is all within my first 2 years of working for the department. We didn't have the strictness that we have today. 24 years later, that would not at all fly. But at any rate, what I finally ended up doing is I went on a 2-week drinking binge, and I started Memorial Day weekend, and I started drinking, and I had drank many, many times and been able to kind of pull myself together because I loved my job. I loved working at juvenile hall. I loved what I did. I loved the kids. And what ended up happening is many times I could always get my shit straight and get back to work, but we always had 3 days off. So I would drink on 2 days. I would never drink on the third day because I knew if I even had one beer on the third day, I may not make it to work the next day. And that's just the way I rolled. It was getting so unpredictable. That being said, I knew my drinking was increasing. I left Mira Mesa and I got a little one-bedroom cottage in North Park. And I finally thought, I am so happy because I'm by myself now. Nobody can shame me about my drinking. Nobody's going to know what I'm up to because I live by myself. I live by myself in a cottage right there on Park Boulevard, and I can drink like I want. And I did everything that probably every one of you guys all did in here. I ended up with people who I never should have been with, lower companionship. You know, it was sad. It was sad. It really was, because my self-worth wasn't high. I finally went on a two-week drinking binge. I made schedule changes. I switched my schedule. I comped off. I said I would show up for people. I didn't show up for people. And the bottom line is I was socked into my little cottage from Memorial Day weekend to June 11th, 1990. I would walk to the liquor store. I didn't brush my teeth. I had mold on my coffee. It was very sad. Dumped over ashtrays. Everything had gone sideways. And a coworker came to my house who worked at Juvenile Hall, and he said, "What is going on?" And I let him in. And I said, "Look around." And I had always kept my world so private, but I said, "Look around." And he did. And he says, "You need help." And I said, "I know." Like my ass was kicked. I was like, "I can't. I just can't." And, you know, during that time, I called 411. I would have loved to have known how many times I called 411. Should have called 911, you know. But I'm like, you know what? I'm not going down easy. Screw them all. I'll call 411. Because I wanted to know what date and time it was. And I got sober June 11th. There's some rationale to this story. But it was gloomy. It was really gloomy. So I wouldn't know if it was 6 in the morning or 6 at night. And because I was just drinking and sleeping and eating and drinking and sleeping. And I just kept calling in sick, schedule changing and such. A friend came over and I agreed to go to Mesa Vista Hospital. June 11th, 1990, I went to Mesa Vista Hospital. And that was, I've never left the fellowship. I've been blessed from that day forward to today. I'm standing here at 21 years sobriety, and I've never had to pick another sobriety date again because I've listened to you people. And what I knew is that when I got into Mesa Vista, my ass was whooped. I was done. I had tried so hard for so long, and I was tired of living in conflict. You know, I was at conflict at my job all the time because I'd be talking to people and very good at my job, but then I knew I had this secret life. I always had a secret life with a lot of shame around it because of my behavior. It was not that to be proud of. But from the day I walked into Mesa Vista Hospital, I stayed a week. I did the aftercare program because they said I could do that as long as I would come to it and I could go back to work. And I wanted to go back to work so bad because that's the only thing I had that was normal. I really, truly didn't have friends. I didn't have friends. I would have make-believe friends. But I never let people know what was going on in my world because of the shame. I started taking the suggestions that you people told me. They said, get a sponsor, do 90 and 90. I did probably 120 because I had nowhere to go. And I lived in that one-bedroom cottage, and I was afraid to go back there because that's where I drank, you know, and I knew how strong my disease was. And I knew when I was in that cottage, like I would look in the mirror and I would say to myself, "You're turning just like your mom." And I would have these conversations like by myself, and I would say, "Yep, I'm sober now. I don't drink." You know, I would have like this whole make-believe conversation because the truth is I didn't want to drink anymore. You know, so from the day I entered the program, I've just continued to do what you people have taught me. And I do have a God I do business with today. And I know I have a God because I'm a drunk, not just like little tiny baby drunk or, you know, whatever. I just know that it wasn't good. It wasn't happy at all. And at 10 years sober, I met my husband, who is in the front row today. And I met my husband, and I thought, "Oh, I don't know how this is going to work." But you know what? We dated for 3 years, and my husband has taught me a lot about love, unconditional love, and really opening up my heart. And truly, the first couple years we were married, I wasn't sure if I was sometimes coming or going, because all I knew is to scrap. Like, people would say, do you want to be right or be happy? And I'm like, yeah, both. I want to be right. I want to be happy. And always looking for a fight, like always looking to bring people down, just always looking, you know, just looking for trouble. And what I've learned, next week on the 17th of this month, we'll be married 11 years. And I love my husband, hands down, today way more than I did when I married him. Because there's a true partnership today. There's a true, true partnership. And we have two boys. We have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. And I was 40 when I got married. And, you know, we dated, and I had my first baby at 41. I'm telling you, you're getting the whole truth. And then we waited a year, and we thought, let's just wait and see what happens. And I was 42, and we tried again, and we got pregnant again, and we had a healthy baby boy at 43. And so I stand before you today at 51, and they say moms in their 40s live longer. And I say, no shit, because you don't have a choice. I mean, we're at the ball field. I mean, you know, my boy, there's no e-ride ticket. You know what I mean? Like, oh, she's 50. I'll just let her, you know, kind of, you know, not have to go through this. It's like, no, no, no. They're boys, and they play sports, and they wrestle. They're getting better about the wrestling. But the truth is my life is today, my life, ever since I entered the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's not to say I've never thought of drinking. It's not to say that I've done any of it perfect. None of that. But what I have done is every day I've known that my desire to stay sober exceeds my desire to drink again. And you people taught me that I will pick up where I left off. And I was socked in for 2 weeks in my little cottage in North Park, and I couldn't get to the one job I loved. So 21 years later, 24 years with the probation department, my life is completely different. I work with women today. I have a sponsor today who I thank very much, who's there for me. You know, it's like I do what you people have taught me. None of my stuff is original, like none of it, none of it. And at work, nobody knows at work. You know, I do my job. I'm one among many. But in so many ways, people will say, like, how do you get, like, that wisdom? Or how do you say the things you say? And the truth is because I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I learned, I've learned here. And just one thing before I close is that, you know, my goal this year is not, like I say, to cradle that little girl inside, but to have some compassion for the little girl in me. That the truth is I did have a sad growing up. And not to be harsh on that, but to parent myself so that I can better parent my boys. You know, I have two, like I say, two boys, Brandon and Tyler, and I look at them in bed and I think, you know what? My one little guy's in the fourth grade. He'll be in the fifth grade. And I think, you know, he doesn't hear his mom cry every night. My husband and I don't drink. You know, we don't have that going on in our home. And I don't think my kids will have the anxiety that I grew up with. Because every day when they wake up, I'm rubbing their back and I'm saying, good morning, sweet love. How are you today? Because it's far exceeded what I could have imagined. I love my husband. Thank you, John, for showing me how to love. Because the truth is that you've got a heart of gold. And that's what I always admired that in you, is that the man loves no matter what. And I didn't come from that. You know, I didn't come from that. I wanted to fight for about the first 4 years. All I wanted to do is be right and happy. And today I don't want that. Truly in my heart, today I want to love and I want to be happy. And I know that he's my partner. And I thank all my friends. I thank Barb. I thank Rick Zawaki for introducing me to my husband. And thank you so much for allowing me to be of service on my 21st AA birthday.